This is the Wheeler Centre podcast.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Collins Street Baptist Church and to the new news conference, which has been going on Thursday, today, and will also continue tomorrow. My name is Margaret Simons. I'm Director of the Centre for Advancing Journalism and also a journalist. We run the new news conference every year to take a broadly optimistic look at the era of great change in communications and journalism. And our partners in this are Swinburne University and the Wheeler Centre for Books and Ideas. Before we start, I'd just like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which this event and the whole news conference is taking place and pay respects to their elders, past and present, and any other elders who are with us tonight. If we ask which jobs in Australia really matter, you might all choose different sorts of jobs, and they matter in different kinds of ways. There's the Prime Minister, of course, the Leader of the Opposition. There are doctors who cure cancer. There are nurses who care for us in hospital. There are teachers who teach in school. And we could argue about all those jobs and which matters most and how they matter. But one of the contenders is surely the person who leads our most important cultural institution, which is the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Our keynote speech tonight from Michelle Guthrie is from the new managing director of the organisation. She took up the job in May this year. For 10 years, Mark Scott held that job, and I'm glad to say he was a frequent visitor to the new news and indeed stood on this very spot and gave his farewell keynote, really, about this time last year. Michelle Guthrie, so far, has not talked a great deal about the ABC and how she sees it and where she's going to take it. Tonight is not the first time she's appeared in public talking about these things, but it's one of the first. And I hope we're going to have a really interesting time. Of course, this audience at a journalism conference will be primarily interested in journalism. And if we're talking about jobs that matter and why they matter, it is surely because how we are informed and how we bind together as a community, which is really what journalism is really about the health of civic society. And that's what makes all those other jobs possible. It's my great pleasure to welcome the new Managing Director of the ABC, Michelle Guthrie.
Good evening. I want to begin tonight by touching on an issue that's divided a nation. It's dominated water cooler talk, revealed long-held animosities, and polarised different generations. It's been described as an issue highlighting one of the greatest failings in our economy and wider community. And the subject has been just as hotly contested in the mainstream media as it has in the cut and thrust of social media and new digital news platforms. No, it's not Four Corners Nehru program. Of course, I'm talking about the great smashed avocado debate of 2016 and the broader topic of housing affordability. Writing in his Weekend Australian column 2 weeks ago, demographer Bernard Salt offered what he now maintains was a satirical observation that millennials might stand a better chance of entering the housing market if they gave up their weekend avocado brunch habit for $22 a pop. Bernard had some simple advice. Eat in and save your smashed avocado expenditure for the deposit on a first home. Cue the great debate, as proponents on both sides weighed in with their views about financial discipline and wanton expenditure. The pro-Salt camp stuck mainly to legacy platforms, while younger cohorts comprising the smashed avocado revolutionary front waged their battles primarily through social media. Credit to The Australian and to Bernard for finding an interesting way to focus attention on a particularly difficult and pressing policy issue. What I found interesting in this entertaining debate was what it reinforced about changing media consumption habits. There is no mass media now. Different demographics congregate around different platforms. Media companies that try to corral all their audiences in one place, or who rely on loyalty to keep them there, do so at their peril. But even in a fragmented marketplace, it's possible to carry issues and stories across audiences and, as a media company, to retain broad relevance. You can create water cooler moments, and they don't all have to relate to pop culture or require a satirical lead-in. You can ensure that your content, whether it's a probing news investigation, a brilliant local drama, or a provoking science documentary, is relevant across socioeconomic and age demographics. What you need in this fragmented, rapidly evolving media landscape are a number of skills, including diversity, dexterity, and collaboration. Tonight, I'll talk about the work the ABC is doing to make sure we remain relevant and unique to all audiences, young, old, and everyone in between. Given we're at the New News Conference, I'll concentrate on the strategies being employed in the news space. However, the issues raised apply equally across all facets of ABC output. The skills I refer to are relevant for all areas and for all content creators. The ABC Charter is quite specific about the remit for the national broadcaster. We're required to deliver programs that contribute to a sense of national identity and inform and entertain and reflect the cultural diversity of the Australian community. If you distill that, it means retaining relevance to our stakeholders by acting as a trusted source of Australian stories, conversations, and culture. It means being distinctive and independent. Dexterity is an essential attribute for any media company pursuing relevance in a splintered world. Yes, the digital era has caused disruption and no end of pain to many journalists, but it has also given us powerful new tools to reach audiences and to extend the life and accessibility of our content and stories. Diversity, in all its aspects, is very much a key to relevance. I've driven this issue hard in my first 6 months at the ABC, not because, as a daughter of Chinese-Australian parents, I can claim some sort of moral superiority on this issue, but it's because the ABC and I fervently believe that the national broadcaster can only truly reflect cultural diversity if it lives it. Our program makers must embrace a wider set of life experience if they're to commission and deliver content that's more representative of and relevant to our audiences, as our charter dictates. We'll struggle to reach a broader audience if we fail on this very important goal. Finally, collaboration is also vital. The modern media company must explore opportunities to partner in order to flourish in the new landscape. Partnerships are needed not only in distribution, but in the creation of content. Tonight, I'll unveil some initiatives that straddle all three skill sets: dexterity, diversity, and collaboration. They demonstrate how the ABC is adapting to the challenges and how it is seeking to remain relevant to all Australians. But first, some industry context. I'm sure I'm not the only Australian media executive lying awake at night thinking about the impact of new global players such as Netflix, and frankly, actually watching Netflix. The adage that people overestimate the immediate impact of new technology and new players while underestimating the long-term effects offers little consolation. After announcing their recent third-quarter results, Netflix's share price rocketed by more than 25% in a week, representing a US $11 billion increase and a total market cap of nearly $54 billion US dollars. News Corp, one of my former employers, has a market value of roughly $8 billion, which together with 21st Century Fox at a market cap of $48 billion, combined are seen by the market as having the same value as Netflix. As Fool.com recently observed, and I like that, Fool.com, Netflix was worth just $5 billion 4 years ago. A lot can happen in a presidential election cycle. The figures for Netflix in Australia are no less sobering. Nearly 5 million Australians aged 14 and over now have access to Netflix, while last May, Ray Morgan estimated Netflix had 1.9 million subscribing homes, including paid, free trials and special offers. This means Netflix achieved in its first 18 months a market share that took Foxtel 20 years to achieve, another one of my former employers. To paraphrase recent but reluctant Nobel Literature Award winner Bob Dylan, the times are clearly changing at astronomical speed. There's a temptation to see the media revolution through the eyes of one demographic, the millennials. But we all know that the three foundations of new media use are applicable to age groups across the spectrum. Those foundations are searchable, on-demand access to content, anywhere and anytime communications, and the ability to convert media into shareable, transportable, and easily edited chunks. So if you take someone who's under the age of 40 today, unfortunately that's not me, they have spent their entire adult life with the internet, technology that went mainstream in 1995. The use of mobile phones exploded in the years that followed the widespread use of internet technology. By the time our 40-year-old turned 18, the MP3 revolution driven by Napster was in full swing and redefining the music landscape. The technologies that followed, broadband, smartphones and tablets, video on demand and social media, simply served to extend these foundations. And why do we here today care about all of this? And because it's quite clear it's not just about Netflix. Audience consumption habits are crossing genre boundaries, and as a result, the ways in which people are receiving and consuming news have also changed. According to Reuters Institute, in 2013, 72% of people reported that they'd used television in the last week as a source of news. In 2016, that figure has declined to 66%. So where are people increasingly going to receive their daily news? The Reuters Institute reports that in 2016, 64% of 18 to 24-year-olds predominantly get their news from online sources, including social media. The ABC's own data tells a very similar story. Since 2014, the ABC has seen a 49% increase in ABC News and Current Affairs monthly plays on iView, and a 51% increase in ABC News monthly plays on our YouTube channel. Audiences are also increasingly consuming news content on their mobiles. Over half of all Australians now use their mobile phones to access news each week, while desktop news browsing has flatlined. This mobile trend is accelerating so that by 2018, we expect monthly mobile visits to news online to outstrip desktop users by 6 million users a month. And it's important to note that mobile users share content across social media much more frequently than desktop users. We live in a social media-driven world. 85% of Australians participate in social media each month, and 1 in 5 of all online minutes in Australia are spent on social media. So it should come as no surprise that this desire to connect and share extends to the consumption of news. 52% of Australians use social media to find, watch, read, share, or comment on news each week. 45% use Facebook to access news. More than 1 in 4 18 to 24-year-olds cite social media as their main source of news. And so the effort ABC News has invested in being the leader on all the big social platforms will help us engage increasing parts of the audience who may not usually watch or listen to broadcast media. The ABC has long prided itself on providing the best news and current affairs service in the nation, with high quality, in-depth coverage that is fiercely independent. We've seen that displayed in recent weeks. In fact, that consistency and commitment to quality has been evident across my entire time at the ABC. I took on the role of Managing Director in early May, on the eve of the federal budget, and a week before the federal election was called. That election campaign demonstrated the ABC at its best. Utilising its breadth of programming and its very talented journalists and commentators to examine policies in depth and to hold the policy makers to account, employ tools like Vote Compass to engage the community and involve them in the democratic process, and to back our expertise and knowledge to get behind the scenes and get behind the issues and explain the outcomes. The ABC is proud, for example, to have made investments that have led election analyst Anthony Green to become the definitive electoral guide for Australian audiences. As the election coverage showed, when we get it right and provide Australians with the essential context they're seeking, the audience responds. During election night and the following day, we reached 10 million Australians across radio, TV and digital. On our reckoning, this is the largest audience the ABC has ever reached for any event. Elsewhere, that investment is paying obvious dividends. Only last week, we had Four Corners penetrating insights into the lives of children living in Nauru. And this week, the announcement of the Walkley Award nominees for excellence in journalism was again heavily representative of the work done by ABC News with 28 nominees across 14 categories. I am committed to maintaining our investment in quality news and current affairs. It's a real strength of the ABC, one that marks us out as being distinctive and indispensable to our audiences, especially in the current industry climate. Our annual audience appreciation survey has again shown the ABC to be the nation's most trusted source of news and current affairs, and we remain one of Australia's most trusted institutions alongside the High Court and the Reserve Bank. But the media sector is full of stories of once great institutions that thought they'd worked out the road to success, that had secured audience loyalty and could endure by sticking to its strengths. My message is a direct one. I'm aware of arguments that ABC News should stick to its flagship programs and limit its digital investment because that's where its point of difference lies. And digital strategies pander to a wider audience and dilute investment in the flagships. And digital should be left to the marketplace with the ABC concentrating on market failure activities. I reject each of these arguments. Digital is embedded in the ABC Charter, and the public expects a national broadcaster to use its ingenuity to find new ways to make its content available to audiences. It's done so from its origins in the 1930s and will continue to do so. Over its history, the ABC has had to balance its investment across its platforms. Yes, that task has become more difficult as funding envelopes remain tight, while the audience's demand for different ways to access content grows. But the ABC can't be frozen in time, no matter how much some stakeholders would like it to be. Our commitment to quality can't be measured through a line-by-line defence of every program. As I've repeatedly stressed to our teams, programs and program schedules can and will change. We must defend the core missions behind our content, but to resist change means we'd be locking ourselves away from new audiences, we'd be tying up funds in areas of overlap and duplication, and we'd be committing ourselves to ever-declining reach and relevance. Our newsmakers are rightfully proud of the work that goes into our flagship programs across radio and TV. However, there's increasing awareness that our digital platforms are more than just an adjunct. They are an increasingly powerful way of extending the life of our stories and making them more available to wider audiences. Durability and accessibility are two more keys to the ABC's strategy and focus. The ABC is tasking its news force to imagine how they could better serve audiences if every significant piece of journalism had an equal digital life. This is, of course, quite different to the digital-first mantra that still echoes through many newsrooms. Equal digital life instead poses these questions. How can we ensure our stories have the same value to our digital audiences as to our TV and radio audiences? How do we ensure that a terrific piece of journalism on Four Corners, watched by a million people on Monday night, will also appeal to an online audience who doesn't regularly watch the ABC? How can we create value for audience members who, at the moment, simply don't turn to scheduled ABC News broadcasts? I've asked each of our content areas to address these questions in formulating their strategies. They go to the heart of what it means to embrace dexterity. I offer one prime example. Earlier this year, ABC journalist Sarah Dingle produced The Baby Business, an investigation into the fertility industry and the roller coaster that many women go through in their attempts to conceive using IVF. It was compelling journalism, storytelling that was timely and offered a real look at an issue relevant to many Australians. It was a story that should have spread beyond the broadcast boundaries of Four Corners, as it appealed to a demographic that often doesn't fit into the normal Four Corners audience. ABC News paused to consider why not. This is one of the examples that led to the concept of Equal Digital Life. If the story was to run now, we would ask at the beginning of the production, how will we ensure that this story is watched by a million people on Monday night, but also gathers a new audience on a digital platform? How do we produce this story in the first place with content with equal value to digital audiences? Clearly, we're not the only ones treading in this space. Since tech billionaire and Amazon boss Jeff Bezos purchased the Washington Post, they've taken away the divide between print and digital and embraced analytics. Digital video editors are now embedded in every part of the operation, and design engineers liaise with journalists to ensure audience engagement is as focused on digital content as it is on the content itself. Obviously, the ABC budget doesn't match the Bezos' deep pockets, but we must become more proficient at understanding audience behaviour and expectations, while our staff must have the dexterity to ensure all content has an equal digital life. Changing consumption trends tend to have a ripple effect across the ABC. They need all of ABC responses. We're about to introduce a number of initiatives across our platforms that reflect the changing consumption trends of our audiences. These changes, to be rolled out between now and early next year, will help ensure ABC News is always recognisable and distinct, regardless of the platform. This modernised ABC news look will be consistent across all platforms and channels, television, radio, digital and social media, making it easier for audiences to identify trusted, distinctive ABC News no matter where they are. Along with changes to ABC News, ABC Local Radio will undergo a similar redesign to ensure we resonate with current and future audiences. A new look ABC Local Radio Capital City Network will, from early 2017, offer a nationally consistent, refreshed sound and look. And next week, ABC TV will announce its programming slate for 2017, another year of the best of the ABC. We're looking forward to delivering unique content that entertains, educates, and informs. The very audience-centric approach to content has prompted ABC News to take a fresh look at commissioning and presentation. As I've mentioned before, to do this, we must seek a more diverse workforce and cover a more widespread range of issues. We know that our audience's content needs are as diverse as its many faces. We know our audience is interested in healthcare, childcare, banking, cost of living issues, agriculture, education. They're not just interested in the price of smashed avocados. We also recognise that the best way to deliver a broad range of content is to retain a broad range of staff in a broad range of locations across the nation and across the world. ABC News maintains operations in every capital city, 48 suburban and regional newsrooms across the country, and 11 international bureaus. So I'm attempting to visit all of them over the next few years. ABC News regularly assesses its requirements in maintaining the correct levels of coverage. Last year, for example, we opened a bureau in Beirut to ensure the Middle East continues to be adequately covered by on-the-ground journalists. ABC News is also increasingly aiming to improve the breadth of its staff and on-air talent. And we want the faces you see and the voices you hear reporting and discussing news of the day to be as diverse as our audience. The goal for the ABC and for ABC News is to look and sound like Australia, it is clear we need to do much more to accurately reflect our community. Our teams across all ABC divisions are actively addressing diversity, as we're required to do by the Commonwealth. The ABC Equity and Diversity Plan aims to develop an equal opportunity program designed to eliminate discrimination and promote equal opportunity for women, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, people from non-English speaking backgrounds, and people with disabilities. Since 2014, diversity in ABC news content has been identified as a key priority, and the News Diversity Group was established to find practical ways to improve diversity in our coverage and our workforce, comprising journalists, field and technical staff from across state newsrooms and current affairs. Beginning in 2014, the News Division has conducted annual on-air diversity counts, looking at gender, ethnic diversity and Indigenous representation in our content. The results of this study were communicated with staff across states and territories. The second count was conducted in October 2015, and the third is currently underway. We already have some very talented people at the ABC who represent our commitment to diversity. That list includes presenters and journalists like Kumi Taguchi, Jeremy Fernandez, Karina Cavallo, and Patricia Cavallis. And as Managing Director, I'm not only the first woman to hold the position, but I'm also the first Managing Director from a non-English speaking background, or at least on my mother's side. I'm delighted to announce tonight some tremendous news for the ABC and our audiences in how we report Indigenous affairs. Recently, ABC News held an Indigenous staff summit to discuss ideas and develop strategies around how we communicate issues in our Indigenous communities and how we cover the contributions and rich cultures of Indigenous Australians. The key recommendation out of the summit was to establish a dedicated Indigenous reporting team led by a dedicated Indigenous Affairs Editor. This team will enhance the breadth and depth of our Indigenous coverage across policy, the challenges to those communities, and the contributions they make. I'm very pleased to announce that one of Australia's leading journalists, Stan Grant, has agreed to join the ABC as ABC Editor, Indigenous News Coverage of the National Indigenous Affairs Coverage Team. Stan is a Wiradjuri man with a tremendous ability to articulate his experiences and those of his people. As a Walkley winning journalist, he has reported from around the world, including as a correspondent with CNN International in Hong Kong and Beijing. His books, The Tears of Strangers and Talking to My People, are the work of a journalist and writer who is acutely aware of where he's come from as an Indigenous Australian and what the challenges are for his fellow Indigenous Australians. He's unrivaled for communicating the plight of those communities, as was evidenced earlier this year when he delivered an impassioned speech in the wake of ABC reporting on the Don Dale Youth Detention Centre. He described his reaction to that story as an anger that comes from the certainty of being, an anger that speaks to my soul. They're powerful words, and I couldn't think of a better journalist to lead this important team at the ABC. Stan's work and the work of the team around him will be supported by an absolute commitment by the ABC to its Indigenous coverage. This will include providing cultural awareness training for our staff and professional development plans for our Indigenous staff across our newsrooms and platforms. We want an ongoing conversation with our staff and our audiences about our coverage of Indigenous Australia, what we do well and what we can do better. I believe this is a very important initiative the ABC is embarking on, and I wish our teams who are involved the very best. One very exciting way we're collaborating to reach our audiences is through the launch of a dedicated news service with third-party provider Chatfuel, and available on Facebook Messenger, which goes live in time for Melbourne Cup next week. From Monday, ABC News has a new way for Australians to stay across the news with the launch of a dedicated news service on Facebook Messenger. ABC News on Facebook Messenger will send users a message each morning with the latest summary and upcoming news events. Our editors will provide a fast guide to what's making the news from the very start of the day. So time-pressed users have the choice of simply skimming news summaries or can dive deeper and read the whole story if they wish. Users can message the service whenever they want to find out the news they want to know and opt in to receive breaking news alerts. You can also choose topics you want to focus on, such as sport, business, and of course the US election. These interactivity and personalization are key features of the service. In August 2016, 11.6 million people in Australia used Facebook Messenger. Messaging apps have seen massive global growth over the past few years, especially among younger users, and offer a promising opportunity for ABC News to reach new audiences. Our goal is to make ABC News an essential part of people's daily lives by engaging with whatever medium they are on. The ABC's news digital teams believe that current technologies help us create and evolve a close connection with our audiences, and we will increasingly look for opportunities to give users control over what events they can get notified about. The focus on highly personalised and curated content instead of straight automation sets the ABC apart from other media outlets. The ABC is at an important moment in its history. The challenges we face as an industry have the potential to change the way the ABC engages with its audiences and how it remains relevant for the next generation. Our aim is relevance and distinctiveness for all Australians. And I've outlined how, through initiatives that allow us to focus on dexterity, diversity, and collaboration, we will be well-placed to reach that goal. 2016 has been a year of some triumphs and some lessons for the ABC across all our divisions and on all our platforms. Australians continue to value us as a national broadcaster, and every day we like to think we repay that trust with the highest level of broadcasting we can possibly offer. But we can and will be more than this. Wherever you are, and whoever you are, the ABC will be the source of stories, entertainment, and information for all of you. Thank you.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we have a little under half an hour for question and answers, and my main function here tonight is to help broker your questions. But I've been trying to interview this woman for about 6 months, and I am going to take advantage of my position as chair to ask a couple of questions of my own. Michelle, your comment about not defending programs line by line, no matter what, I heard you say Late Line won't be part of your program lineup next year. Am I wrong?
When did I say that?
You didn't say that. That was how I read what you said.
I guess the message, as I said, across the board, is that we need to think of ourselves as not just individual programs. And, you know, I'll give you an example. If you look at Foreign Correspondent, is you know, the mission of Foreign Correspondent to come up with a half-hour weekly television program? No. I think the mission of Foreign Correspondent is to explain what's happening in the world to Australians and give it context and analysis. And that applies whether you're doing that on TV, on podcasts, on radio, on digital. That's the core mission. And we're going to need that mission forever. So the way I think about it is it's you know, kind of getting away from individual programs and individual output and thinking of ourselves more of what is our mission, what are we here to do, and how do we do that effectively, and how do we have the dexterity to do that across different platforms, frankly, some of which may not have even been invented yet, and to audiences wherever they are, whoever they are.
Well, I don't disagree with you about any of that, but will Late Line be part of the program lineup next year?
I've given you the answer. As I said, it is about having the overall perspective on what are we trying to do.
Okay, we'll draw our own conclusions on that. Now, you've talked a lot about distribution, and I'm on the record, and I think anybody who thinks about the way journalism is moving understands that content may be king, but distribution is certainly queen. It's very, very important. But what about the depth of journalism? Mm-hmm. Rather than having little bits of news everywhere, what about the sort of deep dive journalism that indeed was involved in Nauru on Four Corners and elsewhere? Are you going to invest in that? I noticed you said you would maintain the investment in journalism. What about increasing it?
I think that what makes us relevant and distinctive and indispensable is the investigation. I mean, increasingly, and you know, you know this better than anybody else, that breaking news, or you know, what happened in Canberra today, or what happened in Melbourne, or you know, any sort of, you know, daily news is increasingly a commodity. And you know, the way in which we can really add value to our audiences and be distinctive is around the investigation, the context, the analysis. Why does this matter to me? And you know, increasingly, I think that's where we should be you know, prioritizing our investment. So if I think of it as you know, either or, I think the investigation and the analysis and context piece is frankly much more important than the daily news piece.
Now, one of the criticisms of your predecessor is that there was too much investment, if you like, on the channels of delivery, the new technology, and not enough in the hard work that actually takes journalists reporting on public events and other things. Is that something you intend to address? Is there going to be more investment actually in the journalists?
There is great investment in the journalists right now. I mean, you know, you look at the 11 international bureaus that we have, the 48 suburban and regional bureaus, the depth of news coverage that we have across television, radio, regional, and digital is extraordinary. And, you know, we're frankly investing at a time when commercial media is really pulling back from a lot of those investments. So, you know, we absolutely, as I said, you know, in my speech, absolutely have a commitment to news and current affairs. I think the question you were kind of alluding to was around the number of channels that we have.
And the number of journalists.
And the number of journalists. But, you know, I think the way I sort of look at the channels that we have is that, you know, they very much have to have their identity. And I think that the work that was, you know, recently done for, you know, in moving ABC3 to ABC Me was really about trying to have an identity for that key, you know, primary school audience that, you know, loves ABC content, but loves it not just on TV, but loves it on digital, you know, actually consumes it as much on iView as it does on television. So how do we think about our channels as not just being the TV channels, or our brands as not just being that, but again, you know, thinking about our ability to have those across a number of different ways of delivery.
Mm. When I was researching the profile I wrote of you for the monthly, a profile without the central interview, of course.
She's really not going to allow you to.
A great shame. No, I am. I've got two more questions and then I'll take them from the audience. But people said to me, and she's from Google, nobody understands the value of content like Google, because while you need to Google things, obviously there has to be something at the end of that search.
I've heard the reverse, actually.
You've heard the reverse? Oh, well, we could perhaps argue it either way. But you've just talked again a lot about distribution, and you haven't really answered my question. Are there going to be more journalists actually doing the journalism?
I'll answer it a different way. I think that, you know, with what our budgets are, and increasingly what we're trying to do is actually move investment from the sort of non-content activities into content activities, and that includes journalism, that includes more Australian content on television. But that will be something that will be done over time, because, you know, we're always looking at more efficient ways of actually, you know, distributing our content, you know, providing back office services or providing support services. But I think that if you look at the journalists themselves, I think that increasingly what we're going to be doing is really trying to figure out how do we reduce overlap and duplication, and how do we actually free up journalists to spend more time on analysis and context and investigation, which again takes longer, but is frankly going to be much more valuable to our audiences and much more relevant to them.
And if we could particularise this, your announcement tonight about Stan Grant, which obviously will be one of the news stories within minutes.
No one's waiting.
Exactly, nobody's waiting. It's already being tweeted everywhere, I'm sure. How big is this team going to be, and how many front-of-camera Indigenous reporters will there be?
You will have to wait for those details. I feel like there will be some more to kind of talk about in future around the composition of that team. I think we've got some further announcements to make.
You must have a budget in mind.
That's entirely up to Gavin.
Okay, and I assume this means Stan will be leaving Sky News and NITV. Is that right?
Yes, I assume so.
Yes, okay. He's not going to try to job share between the two of you. Okay, well, I could go on all night, as you can probably tell, but that's not the main point of tonight. The main point of the new news and of tonight is to give the audience an opportunity to think and talk about journalism. We have some roving microphones, I'm pretty sure. I can't actually see. Yes, we do have two roving microphones. Please wait for them to come to you before you answer the question. Otherwise, you're really just talking to yourself. And please also make it questions, not speeches or statements. I will close you down.
I'll take that as a comment.
Speech or a statement. Indeed. I'm not Tony Jones, I'm afraid. Okay, so the microphones will find... Yes, go ahead.
Thank you very much to the Wheeler Centre and the organisers for tonight, and Michelle, and the presentation this evening. Michelle, you're very lucky you're not a Republican politician. I noticed you took a couple of sips of water during your speech. The ABC back in 2013 ridiculed Marco Rubio for taking a couple of sips of water while he was drinking some water.
Well, anyone can be free to ridicule me, it's fine.
I'm not ridiculing you. The ABC TV has been my main source of news and current affairs for most of the last 50 years. But I now feel your news programs are largely just filtered, biased propaganda for preferred leftist narratives like same-sex marriage, refugees, identity politics and many others, while opposing views and other topics never get a look in. Can I get you to respond in respect of two issues in particular? First, this week alone, there have been at least three national news reports on the ABC featuring named spokespeople from Labor-aligned law firm Maurice Blackburn, on top of many other examples earlier this year. And in addition, every Friday on John Fain's Friday Wrap, he introduces one of the panellists as Liberty Sanger from Labor law firm Maurice Blackburn. Why is this continual named promotion by the ABC of a Labor-aligned commercial law firm allowed to continue?
I'm going to stop you there, sir, to allow Michelle to answer and also allow time for other questions.
Isn't that disclosure? Again, I don't want to get into kind of chapter and verse. My sense is, and I believe this very strongly, that the way in which, any particular program or presenter is perceived, in terms of bias, is very much in the eye of the beholder. The number of times I will get emails from people, watching exactly the same program and say, that person is incredibly left-wing. How dare they, ask that question of Bill Shorten. Of Malcolm Turnbull. And then I'll have the same person say, how dare that person have asked that difficult question? And I literally see it sort of time after time where the same program is viewed by two different lenses. And we don't always get it right. I mean, I admit we don't always get it right, but we really mostly, we overwhelmingly are unbiased, completely focused on our editorial policy of making sure that we are independent. And I also believe you can't judge a 15-second vignette here and a 15-second vignette there across the fact that we have 50 live microphones on at any given point in time, across radio, across television, and across all of our digital outlets. Okay. So I'm afraid I can't agree with your...
We have another question here.
With your comment.
Hello. Oh, thank you very much for your presentation. Next year is the 40th anniversary of the Fraser government's forced closure of the ABC Community Access Radio Station 3ZZZ in Melbourne. Given the apparent antagonism towards the ABC of the present government, and indeed I think some of the politicians have publicly stated they'd like to see the ABC defunded, or if not actually closed down.
I don't think that's a great majority.
I'm quoting some of the IPA representatives currently in the Parliament. What is your commitment as MD to ensure the future editorial independence and programming independence of the ABC, given that the 3ZZZ closure was probably the first direct interference by government in the ABC's programming independence? So there is a history there.
I must admit, I'm genuinely not aware of the history you're talking about. But you know, I can absolutely reassure you that you know our commitment to editorial independence has never been as strong. You know, the only way we retain the trust of our audiences and the trust of the Australian population at 86%, you know, believing that we are valuable or very valuable, is around making sure that we have that editorial independence. That is critical to us.
I've got a follow-up question to that. I'm sorry, I can't resist. I noticed that when the controversy broke over the Four Corners Nauru programming the other week, that it was a member of your executive who stepped into the line of fire and defended the journalism. Is that something you see as your role, to step into the line of fire to defend the journalism, or is it something that the head of news is going to do, or both?
Well, the person you referred to is Alan Sunderland, who is Director of Editorial Policy. Alan is extraordinary. His attention to detail and his knowledge of...
We all love Alan, but the question is, are you going to step into the line of fire?
Well, I feel like I have. but at the same time, I do believe that, frankly, the journalism should speak for itself. I'm not so sure we should be out there defending, again, every program, every line, rejecting every criticism.
But should you be defending Four Corners coverage of Nauru?
Well, again, I absolutely stand behind the program and the coverage that, you know, in that program and Four Corners, you know, itself. But again, I don't see that we need to do that. I think that the program stands by itself. If you watched Q&A sort of, you know, last on Monday, you will have seen a number of people who are not usual defenders of the ABC actually, you know, speak in favour of that program. And I think, again, it's not my job or any, you know, it shouldn't be my job to have to defend every program every day. Again, I think it should be speaking for itself.
Okay, we'll take another question.
Hi, Michelle. You spoke of the three different elements that you're focusing on in the organisation. Could you talk a bit more about the collaboration piece in terms of the internal culture and what's meant by collaboration, and also externally, are you talking about partnerships or... thanks.
Yeah, I mean, it goes to a lot of issues. One is really this idea that we can't do it all ourselves. So it means that on, you know, the content creation side, who can help us? You know, as we try and do, you know, more, what, you know, who are the best people to work with in terms of collaborating on content? One of the great examples of that is, you know, getting co-funding for Cleverman, which, frankly, with the ambition of that program, you know, it required a lot of funding. And in order to make it world-class, we really, you know, had really needed a US production partner, which made sure that not only was the first series made, but we've committed to the second series. So I think there's collaboration in terms of creating content. I think there's collaboration in terms of distribution. So, you know, the collaboration I talked about with Chatfuel is around, you know, who are kind of innovative players who can help us figure out some of these new platforms. And Chatfuel was, you know, a partner that we that, you know, we identified as somebody who can help us, you know, work on Facebook Messenger, for example. So I think we're looking at collaboration in a number of areas, but mostly it's around trying to figure out ways in which we can extend the reach of our content, make, you know, even more compelling content, and get it to as many people as possible.
Another question?
Thank you, Michelle. You made frequent reference during your delivery about news, and you also provided some very compelling figures about access to news across the various
platforms.
Well,
it is a new news conference, I decide.
Okay. I'm an old-fashioned individual, and I don't know too much about social media. But my perception is that what's being paraded as news these days is very lightweight. And on the ABC, we even get a lot of things that are called news that are really cross-promotions. Have you got a definition of what constitutes news?
Huh. Well, you guys should know this better.
Oh, no. I'm here to ask questions, okay. Michelle.
But, I guess, you know, it is about you know, what's going on in the world, right? What's relevant to me? What do I want to know about? And I do think that the definition of news changes. You know, what I wanted to know about when I was 20 is very different to what I want to know about now. But I think it's all news. It's something that informs me about sort of what's going on in the world, what's going on in my community, what's happening. I guess I'm not so sure I agree with you in terms of the way in which you sort of, you know, think about you know, the, I guess, the dumbing down of news, you know, on social media. I guess the one thing that that gave me great you know, heart was that during the election, we had more people come to us because they wanted a trusted source of what was happening. They wanted to know who, you know, what the election count was. They really turned to us. So, you know, this idea that people only want listicles or, you know, funny photos of cat videos or whatever is I just don't think true for the great majority of people. And I do think that, no, that's frankly more around entertainment than news. What we're providing is news. And I don't think that just because we have an ambition to reach more Australians that we have to, you know, reduce our quality, change our editorial standards, you know, deviate from you know, what's the core of the ABC at all.
Hi, Michelle, over here, sorry. I better declare Stefan Armbruster from SBS World News. Sorry, I'm just over here, Michelle. It's great news that you've announced an Indigenous reporting team at the ABC, and I hope that it won't just be reporters, but also senior reporters, senior editorial staff, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people making senior editorial decisions. My question for you is, what consideration, given that there's accusations of bias within the ABC, have you given to appointing Stan Grant to head this team? And I presume he'll be a federal public servant. And having just recently expressed before the federal election a desire to run for Parliament and apparently for the Conservative side of politics.
Stan Grant, together with any one of our journalists, you know, will be absolutely complying with our editorial policies, and our editorial policies are very clear around conflicts of interest or other issues. So, you know, there is no exception for Stan compared to any one of our other journalists, and he knows that.
I've also been watching and listening to the ABC for 50 years. And I do believe it had deteriorated under Mark Scott, and I would love the days to return where there was an element of what I call, you've been big on buzzwords, and the one I detest most of all is diversity. I think the ABC has got diversity in spades already.
I am going to ask you to bring it to a question,
okay,
so we have limited time.
The question is simply two buzzwords, balance and objectivity. Now, I would love to have an ABC presenter that I can tell is neither Liberal or Labor or Green, but is balanced and objective. But the current batch of them, I find it very difficult to find that.
So what's the question?
The question is balance and objectivity, my two buzzwords, as distinct from diversity. That we've got diversity in spades, I think.
Okay. Do you want to take that as a comment? No. Or?
I think I'll take that as a comment.
Is there anything wrong with balance and objectivity?
Yeah. No, and balance and objectivity is absolutely the core of our editorial policies. And again, there is no deviation from our commitment to that.
Okay, another question.
Thank you. My question relates to ABC Radio and your perception of it as a social change agent. Every day, there are particular themes that are discussed, starting at breakfast, the breakfast program, which are then embedded throughout the day in various other programs, you know, as topics for commentary, discussion, and they're repeated endlessly. So I'm just wondering to what extent you see the ABC Radio's role as a social change agent, and how do you see that as being consistent with its charter?
I don't see ABC local radio as being a social change agent at all. I think it's... So local radio is our primary way in which we connect with our audiences. And, you know, in most markets, it is either number, you know, one or two in its community, and the way in which it really, you know, has that popularity is its connection with its community, and it absolutely reflects the issues that are relevant and discusses issues that are relevant to that community. If they weren't relevant to the community, people would switch off, and we're not seeing that at all in terms of the popularity of our presenters and programs across.
What are the changes? You foregrounded some changes coming for local radio. What are they?
Well, you know, we talked about really having. I talked about having that kind of consistent look and feel. So it is around having much more of an identity around radio, because I really think that the way in which, and actually sort of highlighting how local it really is, and how much we are, through those stations really connecting with our communities. I think that we're going to start with that across our capital cities. But so, you know, it becomes... Not just kind of, you know, generic, but really has that local connection and shows you that local connection.
So again,
you'll have to wait and see, but change is coming.
Okay. Another question from the audience.
Hi. I started my career with ABC Local Radio in regional Queensland. It's a hugely, hugely powerful agent of community change, and it's a lifeline in disasters. You mentioned changes to local radio, and you also mentioned bringing all the regions together. It seems that the ABC is very Sydney-centric and has no real grasp of what regional Australians need in radio. What are these changes, and how much consultation is going to be made in regional Australia?
So the regional changes actually happened a year and a half ago. So, you know, what we did, or actually what Mark Scott did, and, you know, it's been incredibly successful, is to bring an entire sort of regional team together for the first time. And that regional team covers radio, it covers regional radio, it covers regional and rural TV programs, including Landline and Backroads, and also has ABC Open and a lot of our digital regional digital assets as well. And that team has been brought together as a way of really kind of sharing experiences across all of our regional centres, and really trying to have centres of excellence among those regional teams. So, you know, you'll have a team in Newcastle who, you know, when we did the Q&A program in Tamworth, are out there, you know, supporting that team. So before, they were sort of individual silos, but over the last 18 months, that team has been brought together. I was actually with Heather Ewart and the Backroads team in Cygnet in Tasmania this week before I came to Melbourne, and it was extraordinary seeing the stories that Heather and the team are really are really uncovering in regional Australia. And so I absolutely disagree with you that the ABC is Sydney-centric. I think that the way in which we're going to continue to be distinctive is around, you know, telling stories about regional Australia. I mean, I say this a lot to the teams at the ABC, that we're not going to be distinctive by being another microphone or another camera in Federation Square. It's in Cygnet that we're going to find those you know, stories. It's Rosehaven that was filmed down the road that is quintessentially Australian and you know, is proving incredibly popular. So, you know, I think the way in which we really should prioritise in the future is much more around that regional investment.
We've got time for one more quick question. And then I'm afraid I'm going to have to wrap it up.
Thanks, Michelle. You mentioned that you want more diversity at the ABC, on air and behind the scenes, I think is roughly what you said. But to increase diversity, you will need to take on more people from diverse backgrounds.
Yes.
So Meg has asked you, I think, a couple of times about taking on more journalists, but I note, that you didn't definitively say that you're going to take on more journalists. So I'd like to ask, how will you increase diversity if you don't actually commit to taking on more journalists?
Well, you know, on an average year, we bring in at least 100, 200 people every year. So we do have opportunities to look at more diverse employees as we aim to recruit people. But I also think it isn't just around our employees. It's around the people that we have on our panels, whether it's Q&A, whether it's being interviewed on Radio National, or being the communities in which we sort of work in local radio. So it's not just a question of what are we doing for our own talent and our own staff, but it's around the stories that we cover, the way in which we cover those stories. It's around who are we asking to actually appear on air, both on TV and radio, and the way in which we embrace community. So I think it's as said, trying to do it from a number of different angles.
Right. We could go on all night. I certainly could, and it sounds as though most of the audience could as well. But I think we should thank Michelle and also wish her very well. As I said earlier, I don't think there are many more important jobs, and perhaps not many more difficult jobs.
No pressure.
Than the one that she currently has, and of course, facing up to audiences like this and people like me is one of those difficulties. So I'd very much like to thank you for privileging the New News with your time.
Thank you.
And ask the audience to join me in thanking you. And wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Wheeler Centre podcast. Don't forget to visit wheelercentre.com for the best in books, writing, and ideas from Melbourne, Australia, and the world.